ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Good morning. Welcome to AM. It's Monday, the 25th of August. I'm Sabra Lane, coming to you from Nipaluna, Hobart. More than $100 million in investor funds has vanished in a financial scandal that's taken advantage of the federal government's disability housing program. A Four Corners investigation found it's one segment of the scheme designed to build forever homes for people with a disability. It's been exploited by property sharks and those out to make a quick return. Jessica Longbottom reports.
When retiree Annette Williams poured $100,000 into Alamac Developments, she thought she was doing something good with her money. The company promised to build new accommodation for the profoundly disabled and address the disability housing crisis in Australia.
I've just felt it was a win-win, you know. I'm helping someone with my money and at the same time it's giving me a nice return.
It was run by Gold Coast property developer David McWilliams, who raised $92 million from more than 500 investors. The idea behind the investment was legitimate. In 2016, the government created the Specialist Disability Accommodation Program, or SDA, aiming to get people with profound disability out of group homes and aged care. It turned to private investors to construct smaller, custom-built houses, promising to pay big rents, up to around $100,000 per tenant per year.
It was completely believable. Because of the statements and the vision that he had, the backing with the NDIS, it was all there. It looked really, really safe.
At the end of last year, it came crashing down. Court documents have revealed tens of millions in investor funds have likely been blown on things like gambling at the casino, a Fiji resort development, and cryptocurrency.
I wasn't planning to go back to work at all, but it's now, it's a have to.
ASIC's investigation is ongoing, but it's believed investors are owed $78 million from Alamac. In another alleged disability scam, Four Corners has discovered investors have lost an additional $36 million.
Because of the high rental income, a lot of sharks and unethical people have really entered this space.
Gaurav Gupta is an SDA property advisor. On top of the alleged scams, he says investors have been convinced by builders and spruikers to buy disability houses in the outer suburbs of Australian cities because that's where the cheapest land is.
But it's not necessarily where people with disabilities want to live. In these areas, there's lack of amenities.
Because the homes have no tenants, investors aren't getting paid. There are more than 1,000 empty disability houses around Australia, including in Melbourne, Townsville and Perth. The head of the SDA peak body, Jeremy Hope, admits there are issues with the program.
It's a big problem because it's damaging the reputation of many. And I think there is a large portion, and dare I say, near majority, that are doing a really good job.
The NDIA, which administers the SDA program, says investors should always conduct their own thorough due diligence and research and seek independent advice when deciding whether to invest in SDA. Experts say the future of the disability housing program is at risk if the sector isn't cleaned up.
Jessica Longbottom there, and you can see the Four Corners episode tonight, 8:30pm on ABC TV or on ABC's iView. We're staying on the National Disability Insurance Scheme for the moment. You might remember the Federal Minister, Mark Butler, spoke with us last week about the federal government's changes to divert children with mild to moderate developmental delays and autism to a new program starting July next year. He also flagged another wave of reform would be needed from next year to the NDIS. It's costing $48 billion a year and growing at around 10% a year, which the government says is unsustainable. Martin Laverty is the chief executive of disability services provider Aruma. He also helped design and set up the NDIS. He joined me earlier. Martin Laverty, you have deep insights into the NDIS and you believe the measures are needed to bring the program back under control to its original purpose. Why?
Well, every Australian that is dependent on the success of the NDIS should get behind the government's 6% growth target. It's necessary to ensure the taxpayers into the years ahead continue to support the NDIS. The attempt of the National Disability Insurance Agency in recent years to rein in costs has focused on cutting the plans of complex participants. It's focused on squeezing the price paid to not-for-profit registered providers. And the result has been unsafe plans for many participants and a number of large backbone providers of services facing a liquidity crash. The 6% target could not have come soon enough. Yet, it's going to be very difficult to achieve, and that's why organisations like mine need to get behind Minister Butler to ensure we get this across the line.
Mark Butler's also flagged further reforms are needed. A thorough review was finished at the end of 2023. Supported accommodation is the biggest expense on the scheme, and you believe that the current arrangements need to change. Why is that?
Well, the first, supported independent living has failed to change the lives of many Australians because they continue to live in aged and inappropriate housing. Yet we also know that the lack of coordination about the development of new homes has seen the market flooded with vacancies that have not been filled. We have a very inefficient supported disability accommodation arrangement, yet it costs almost $16 billion, the largest proportion of the scheme. It's ripe for an efficiency review to make sure that we are commissioning and coordinating the delivery of homes, something, Sabra, very similar to the way in which bed licences have operated in aged care to ensure that supply is delivered in the right place to match demand for a much more efficient system.
You're concerned that some providers, not all, are building homes in areas where there are already homes. It's an already serviced area, if you like, and in other parts of the country where people really need their homes, they're not getting them.
New homes have been built in parts of southeast North Queensland and Melbourne, where the demand simply doesn't exist. Yet we still have literally thousands of former state government homes in which services are provided that are no longer fit for purpose. And not surprisingly, they have high numbers of vacancies within them. So, in fact, there isn't really any data collected on the number of vacancies in disability accommodation. Whereas if we compare it to the way in which we price and provide for hospital beds and for aged care beds around the country, government coordinates to match supply to demand a much more efficient system. The mistake we made in setting up specialist disability accommodation was allow an unrestricted free market principle to apply so that developers have put houses in parts of the country where they're simply not needed. And who should be surprised that they're not being utilised?
The NDIS minister said last week the bulk of providers are not registered. I think only about 6.5% of them are. That also means they're not trained or screened. Originally, this was a design feature of the program to allow participants to have choice. But it's something that you believe has to change. Why?
The pricing failure of the National Disability Insurance Agency has seen an explosion in unregistered, unregulated, unsupervised providers because the financial incentive exists through the pricing system at the moment for a provider to be able to set up to charge $80 an hour and see most of that go to profit. Whereas for those organisations like Aruma who are registered and regulated, they have to meet the costs of compliance, of training, of supervision. And to date, they're actually losing $4 every hour that they provide that unit of care. The pricing system of the NDIA has failed, and I was delighted last week when I heard Minister Butler at the press club say that he envisaged a pricing arrangement in the future that looks more like the way in which we price for hospitals, the way in which we price for aged care. This is one of the benefits of the disability portfolio being combined with health and ageing.
How urgent is reform, and what would you say, because there are many people who would be very anxious about the NDIS and its future and what it means for them, what do you have advice for them?
Well, we first need to see the foundational supports program that Minister Butler has announced delivered, and that won't be straightforward. The states are yet to sign on, but I've got a great deal of confidence that when the states do the calculation, they'll realise it's far cheaper to contribute their portion to the Thriving Kids Initiative than it would be to continue to pay their portion of a spiralling NDIS. The urgency is because taxpayers are losing support, but we also have to give that assurance to those parents and carers of children with autism and developmental delay in particular, that we will pace these changes, ensuring that alternate service pathways exist before access changes to the NDIS are made.
Martin Laverty, thanks for talking to AM.
Sabra, you're most welcome.
That's Martin Laverty, the Chief Executive of Disability Services Provider Aruma. To the Gaza-Israel war, the brother of an Israeli hostage who was seen on a recent video digging what's said to be his own grave is demanding the international community put greater pressure on mediators Egypt and Qatar to force Hamas to release captives held for almost 700 days. Middle East correspondent Matthew Doran reports.
About half an hour north of Tel Aviv, in a suburban flat, a smiling photo of Eviatar David sits in pride of place above a piano. The 24-year-old's younger brother, Eli, describing the man his family is missing.
When he was young, he was very energetic, but when he got older, he began to really shift, and he became one of the calmest men I know. He's very zen.
Eviatar David was among the 250 abducted on October 7, 2023, and he's one of the 50 captives still held in Gaza to this day, 20 of whom are believed to be alive. He was last seen in a Hamas hostage video earlier this month, emaciated and frail, in an underground tunnel, digging what he said was his own grave. Eli David says world leaders need to apply greater pressure to Hamas to release the hostages and to demand the mediators in this war, Egypt and Qatar, to get that point across to Hamas's senior leadership. He says the last hostages freed back in January and February this year spoke of having food deliberately withheld from them. Since their release, Israel imposed a total aid blockade of the Strip for months and restricted the amount of food going in. The situation has eased slightly, but Eli David insists there's evidence of Hamas's members being well fed.
I believe that the humanitarian aid that is getting into Gaza should go to the hostages as well. Because right now, Hamas decides who gets food and who doesn't. You can see it clearly in the video. The hand of the terrorist there is triple the size of my brother's hand.
On Friday, a United Nations-backed organization declared parts of northern Gaza, including Gaza City, were experiencing famine, something roundly rejected by Israel, arguing it is letting aid in. The international humanitarian community insists the situation is still incredibly dire for hundreds of thousands of Palestinians who are now facing the prospect of being displaced as Israel begins a dangerous new campaign to take control and occupy Gaza City. Hostage families have criticised the Netanyahu government for launching that offensive, arguing it threatens the lives of the remaining hostages. Eli David isn't explicitly backing those concerns, but he does believe more needs to be done to get his brother home.
And right now my only concern is really, and I'm not talking about a deal or a ceasefire or an agreement, I'm talking about making sure the hostages will survive negotiations.
Without wanting to, I guess, get your hopes up or anything like that, have you envisaged what it's going to be like the day that you see him?
It's going to be amazing. Probably the best day of my life. The best day.
What do you say to him when you see him?
I'll tell him that he's a hero. That's it.
This is Matthew Doran in Kfar Saba, Israel, reporting for AM.
Tens of thousands of Australians marched at pro-Palestinian demonstrations in cities around the country yesterday. The protests are happening a fortnight before the annual United Nations General Assembly, where Australia and other countries, including France and the UK, are promising to recognise a Palestinian state. Tanya Dendrinos reports.
Free, free, free Palestine!
It was called the Nationwide March for Palestine. Demonstrators gathered in all Australian capital cities yesterday, as well as smaller regional centres.
It's not enough to recognise the state of Palestine. We really need sanctions on Israel.
For Palestinians who were among the crowd,
this gives us hope and strength as Palestinians.
Others had Jewish heritage.
I just can't stand by with my background and not do anything.
In recent months, a growing number of Australians have voiced their concerns about the war in Gaza. Cos Samaras is a director at Redbridge, which runs qualitative research through focus groups multiple times a week. He says in the early stages of this conflict, the subject rarely came up, but is now being spoken about far more regularly.
We could be talking to them about something else completely different, but they will raise this issue unprompted. And in short, the vast majority of Australians are quite upset in terms of the images they're seeing right now coming out of the Gaza Strip.
And what exactly are they bringing up with you?
Basically, the killing of civilians by a Western power.
Israel has repeatedly denied targeting civilians and says its objective is to eliminate Hamas. But the Netanyahu government's failure to listen to the concerns of allies when it comes to civilians in Gaza has been one of the reasons behind the Australian government's decision to recognise a Palestinian state at the UN General Assembly next month. The move is subject to commitments the government has received from the Palestinian Authority, which currently runs the West Bank. Gaza is controlled by Hamas, but Anthony Albanese has said it can play no role in any future Palestinian state. Still, the Israeli government has been scathing in its criticism. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu labelled his Australian counterpart a weak politician who betrayed Israel and abandoned Australia's Jews. William Bowe is an election analyst and publisher of the Poll Bludger website.
There's more support than opposition, but there's a pretty large block of people who sort of don't feel like Australia has a dog in this fight. I think the Albanese government, for all that it has copped flak from both sides, I think it's done pretty well among those sorts of voters in trying to sort of plot a middle course. I think that is what a lot of people who don't have an opinion one way or the other are looking for from the government.
The 80th session of the UN General Assembly opens on September 9, with a high-level debate starting 2 weeks later.
Tania Dendrinos. The federal government's kicking off the return of Parliament today with an announcement that all first home buyers will be able to buy with just a 5% deposit from October. Here's political reporter Romy Stevens.
For most young Australians, it's harder than ever to buy their first home.
Housing in Australia has never been more expensive than it is now.
To address this, the government's today announcing all first home buyers will be able to purchase a property with a 5% deposit from October. The expansion of the first home guarantee was one of Labor's signature housing commitments at the election. It removes the limit on how many people can use it each year, lifts eligibility caps on income, and property price caps will be higher. May Azizi is the national spokesperson for housing lobby group Everybody's Home. She's also a former Greens national secretary.
This is actually very small scale. So this is a scheme that was going to help about 50,000 people. It's now going to help about 80,000 people.
The expanded scheme will allow thousands of Australians to sidestep the traditional 20% deposit hurdle, potentially slashing years off the time it takes to save for a home. They also won't need to pay lenders' mortgage insurance, which can add tens of thousands of dollars to the upfront costs of a home. The government will assure the remainder of the deposit in the case of a default. Mayor Zizi says it's not a bad move, but it's also not a solution to the housing affordability crisis.
We're not seeing this government really do the kinds of things that need to be done to bring down the cost of housing.
Over the weekend, the government also moved to speed up decisions on housing approvals and limit further changes to the lengthy National Construction Code to help build more homes. But Mayor Zizi is calling for more ambitious social and affordable housing targets, as well as a focus on making rent more affordable.
That's a really key reason why so many people are actually locked out of ownership, because they spend years and years in a rental market that doesn't really give them certainty, doesn't commit them to save.
The housing announcements set up the return of Parliament this week, where the government will look to progress legislation to make medicines cheaper and enshrine penalty rates into law. Meanwhile, pilot-turned-opposition leader Susan Lee flew herself into Canberra yesterday, ahead of a week where climate change will be in focus for the coalition. The government will allow debate in the chamber today on Nationals MP Barnaby Joyce's bill to repeal climate laws.
I think it's incredibly important that the Australian people get some sort of transparency on an industry that has been mired in secrecy.
The private member's bill is not expected to be put to a vote today, but the ABC understands a number of Barnaby Joyce's colleagues will speak in support of it or vote in favour of it when the opportunity comes. It follows the Queensland Liberal National Conference over the weekend, where Nationals leader David Littleproud was part of an overwhelming vote to dump the party's net zero by 2050 commitment.
Romy Stevens there. That's AM for today. Thanks for your company. I'm Sabra Lane.
Hi, I'm Sam Hawley, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. If you happen to visit Washington, D.C. anytime soon, you could notice troops and even armoured vehicles on the streets. Donald Trump has deployed hundreds of members of the U.S. National Guard to crack down on crime. Today, Jeff Capaservis from the centre-right think tank, the Niskanen Centre, on whether D.C. is really that dangerous. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.